It's time for the Newsmax Daily from Newsmax, America's fastest growing cable news channel. Now, here's your host, Rob Carson.
Just want to mention this is the headline so far today. Democrats are set to fail with their effort to bring legislation that would codify Roe v. Wade to the floor of the Senate after opposition from Manchin and a pair of pro-choice Republicans. So the effort to codify Roe v. Wade apparently has been aborted before it could be born. Yeah, they actually, and are you ready for this? The story actually says the effort is almost assuredly dead on arrival. It's dead on arrival. Why are Democrats complaining that the bill is dead on arrival? They love it when things are dead on arrival. And then when they arrive, you just, you know, you put them in a box and you put them in a truck to the hazmat waste facility, and there you go. That's all you got to do. So there you go. So before it could even live, before it even had a chance at life, the effort to codify Roe v. Wade has been aborted. The House had already passed the version of the Women's Health Protection Act, which was the first trimester, I guess, right? And then the next thing would be going on to the Senate, which would be the second trimester, and then signing it into law by the president would be the third trimester. So the bill to codify Roe v. Wade was aborted in the second trimester. There you go. So that's the latest from that. And of course, all the caterwauling, and knew it was going to happen, the caterwauling, all of the white women going out to the suburbs, even though they haven't had an abortion, and all the millennials are going to Supreme Court justices' home. Yesterday, I saw one person of color out in front of Justice Alito's house. One woman of color was there. And if you know the statistics on abortion, and you, maybe you don't, about five times the national average abortions happen in the inner cities with people of color, both black and Hispanic, about seven times the national average. And until now, I had not seen any represented group who actually gets abortions in front of Samuel Alito's house. It's usually just a bunch of Karens, a bunch of Karens coming in from, you know, Chevy Chase and what doing that. Oh, my goodness. We got a lot of stuff economically we need to get to on the show, including gas prices have rocketed to yet another high, $4.37 a gallon after a 17-cent rise in 1 week. Due to a surge in crude oil rates, by the way. So, you know, if we had energy independence in our country, this wouldn't be happening right now. But despite the best efforts, well, actually almost no effort by the Biden administration, releasing oil from the Federal Reserve, which does absolutely D-word for Richard, we're back at record-setting gas prices. So, you know, you really guys got to wait until like a week before the election. You're really kind of shooting, well, you know, before you actually should. You should just, you know, step back and then make it go down a few cents and then claim credit for it. But you were a little bit early. You're a little premature on your release of oil. Yes, this is how the show is going to be today. What else? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I love the fact that Trump supporters are being called ultra MAGA. When I heard that we were being called ultra MAGA, I thought, man, that is really cool. That is really, really, really cool, because ultra MAGA is kind of a sweet sounding name. I mean, not only are we MAGA supporters, Make America Great Again, Trump supporters, they actually have given us the title of ultra MAGA. Does it get any better than that? I am so proud to be an ultra MAGA supporter. This is awesome. I feel like I should tear my shirt open. There should be an undergarment below it that's skin tight with a big logo that says ultra MAGA. And I should go into a phone booth and change, or they don't have phone booths anymore, so I'd have to go somewhere else. But anyway, maybe an abandoned restaurant that was closed down during COVID. I could just go in there and I could change into ultra MAGA. And of course, this is all inspired by the fact that Donald Trump is still incredibly, incredibly popular. Trump-backed candidates won 58-1 in primaries following the races in Nebraska and West Virginia. I think he finally lost one in Nebraska. It was a gubernatorial candidate. But Trump-backed Representative Alexander Mooney brought home the Republican victory for West Virginia's 2nd Congressional District last night. Mooney, who currently serves the state's 1st Congressional District, ran against David McKinley for the Republican nomination. McKinley voted and helped to pass the Democrats' infrastructure bill, while Mooney voted against it. McKinley proclaimed the legislation is good for West Virginia adding that his vote to pass the bill is not a vote for everyone, but West Virginia. So, yeah, he got his clock cleaned. In a political advertisement released early this year, Mooney slammed McKinley, asserting that he betrayed West Virginians by voting for the trillion-dollar spending spree, which, by the way, we're reaping the rewards of with incredible high inflation, 42-year high, and the highest gas prices that we've ever seen in our entire lives. And God bless you if you have a tractor trailer, if you're driving a truck and you're paying $6, $7 a gallon for your diesel. He also ripped his opponent for voting for the January 6th anti-Trump witch hunt to attack our president and our values. Mooney, of course, will face Democrat challenger Barry Wendell in November's general election. But Donald Trump is 58-1 in primaries. And that's why we're hearing this kind of stuff from Joe Biden.
What are the next things that are going to be attacked? Because this MAGA crowd is really the most extreme political organization that's existed in American history.
How do you respond to that? I mean, how do you respond to the president saying you are the most extreme in history? Well, you know what you do? You say, hell yeah. If that's what you think I am, all right, bring it. I don't even care. I don't care what you have to say about me. And the more that you call me names, the more you strengthen me, the more you empower me, the more I realize that you're threatened. You're terribly, terribly, terribly threatened by me. It's remarkable. Yesterday, the president of the United States talked about his plan for inflation. He has no plan for inflation. He started off the gate by stumbling.
And I agree with what Chairman Powell said last week. But the number one threat is the strength, and that strength that we build is inflation. So the Fed should...
You know, I don't trust people who say strength. All right, I've never liked to calling it strength. Where I'm from, it's called strength. It's strength. Super strength. Human strength. It's not strength. You don't say, oh, yes, I have superhuman strength. Really? Strength? Dear God, it's strength. All right, it's strength. There are some things that just, it's strength. Not strength. Strength. It's a strunk. Oh, and yesterday, Joe Biden said he could not only sniff your four-year-old daughter, he could smell your frustration.
Look, I know you got to be frustrated. I know. You can taste it.
Oh, he can taste it. Yeah, he can taste your frustration. Did he really want to say that? It was bad enough with Joe Biden when he was groping women in hotel rooms and attacking them, and then he said, I can feel your pain. You know, it should have been, I can feel you out, but Joe Biden is saying not only can he sniff your children, he can taste your frustration.
Look, I know you got to be frustrated. I know. You can taste it.
You know, no, I don't want you tasting my frustration. I really don't want to have you tasting my frustration or anything else that in my life. In fact, keep your tongue out of my life. But, yeah, there's no answer for inflation. There's no economic plan whatsoever. But he did offer an ultimatum. He said, basically, you could go down the road to destruction with the Biden administration. You could go with those ultra-MAGAs. Those ultra-MAGAs.
The bottom line is this.
Yeah.
Americans have a choice right now.
Yes.
Between two paths.
I think they're choosing right now the ultra-MAGAs 55-1 over you, buddy.
Reflecting two very different sets of values.
Yes.
My plan... tax inflation and grows the economy.
When are you going to turn it on? You know, you've had about, 16 months to do it? And right now it's done the exact opposite. So unless you are completely reversing course and trying something completely new, things aren't going to change.
By lowering costs for working families, giving workers...
You keep promising this every 4 years. Every 4 years, the Democrat Party says they're going to fix this. They're going to fix that. They're going to fix the schools. They're going to fix the infrastructure. They're going to fix the Social Security. They're going to fix this and that. They're going to fix health care. It never gets fixed. But you know what they do? They just keep saying that till Election Day. And then on Election Day, the morning after, they leave some money on the dresser. They get up and walk out.
There's well-deserved raises, reducing the deficit by historic levels, and making big corporations and the very wealthiest Americans... pay their fair share.
I'm not hearing anything new here. Are you hearing anything new here?
The other path is the Ultra MAGA plan.
I love it. I love being Ultra MAGA.
Put forward by congressional Republicans to raise taxes on working families.
That's a lie.
Lower the income of American workers.
That's a lie.
Threaten sacred programs Americans count on, like Social Security.
It's already insolvent. I'm not depending on it. I'm going to be retiring in about 15 years.
Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah, you never fix that either. You keep saying you're going to do it, but you never do D word for Richard.
and give break after break to big corporations and billionaires.
Yep, a billionaire, sure, whatever. Well, corporations actually employ a lot of people and pay taxes.
Just like they did the last time they were in power.
Yeah, the last time we were in power. You know, back when, we had zero illegal immigration and the lowest unemployment rate for African-Americans in history and Hispanic-Americans. Here's Jen Psaki talking about Ultra MAGAs.
Thank you. The president...
I'm an Ultra MAGA.
You have talked about the MAGA crowd or the Ultra MAGA. How does that jive with his desire to be the bipartisan guy?
Well, the president's view is you can do both. He believes that there is work we can continue to do together. We're actively advocating for. He was out.
I don't care what you're advocating for. Just fix the damned economy, you doofus.
Traveling in just last Friday on the Bipartisan Innovation Act. We believe that needs to move forward. It should move forward. And that can build on the nearly 80 bills that we signed into law last year that are bipartisan.
Yeah, that have at least one Republican vote. And those votes generally are people like Adam Kinzinger.
But he's also not going to stand by and not call out what he sees as ultra MAGA.
The ultra MAGA. You know what the ultra MAGA reminds me of? This is something that I watched when I was a kid. Way back when kids only had three channels and, you know, something really good had come on the weekend. It usually was one of those old Japanese destruction movies like Godzilla. Now we've got Ultra Mega Man, and I am proud to be Ultra Mega Man. Jonathan in Columbia, Maryland. I think he's ultra MAGA as well. Hello there, Jonathan, and welcome to the Rob Carson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rob. Love your show and your energy, bud. I think you got to set your bar a little higher. I'm a mega MAGA, not an ultra MAGA.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. Yeah, mega MAGA. Can I fact check you on something, too?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Well, you mentioned the high cost of gasoline. I know that can't be true because Biden ordered the release from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and Hogan got him to give us a brief holiday from the gas tax, so that just gas prices can't be going up. That's just not possible.
Yeah, it's probably disinformation there, Jonathan. It's complete disinformation from the left now is where it's coming from. Yeah, I remember Larry Hogan, the governor, the embarrassment from Maryland, who will never be the president, by the way. He did how long was the gas tax holiday? For a month?
A month at tops.
It was a month, and it saved the average Marylander about $30, right?
Yeah.
Woo! Boy, I tell you what, did you party? I mean, did you just go? I bet you had an ultra mega party, didn't you? Didn't you, Jonathan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, man. Thanks for the phone call. I do appreciate it. Unreal. Unreal. Store prices up as of yesterday, 10.8%, the most in 42 years. Higher prices on hamburger meat. Who calls it hamburger meat? Baby food, baby formula, if you can find it, but you can't. Oh, you know what? I think the Biden administration might have a cure for the baby formula shortage. Abort the baby before it's born. You don't have to worry about it. That's just... an idea. Maybe that's where they need to go. They're using every other sort of logic that's illogical to promote abortion nationally through birth. Why not? Hey, we got a baby formula supply shortage. Well, we won't if we, abort all the babies in the next 10 months. So, food prices rose 9.4% compared with a year earlier last month. Data from the Department of Labor showed this morning. Yeah. Highest rate since 1981. Might have been the last year they made a good Camaro, even though I don't even know if that was a good Camaro. Grocery store prices were up even more, 10.8%. Looks like ground beef or hamburger meat, as some people like to call it, like the word strength. Hamburger meat and strength, two words that I will never say. Steaks, 12%. Oh, you're high. They're much higher than that. Bacon up 18%. Pork chops, 14%. Chicken up 16%. Fresh fish, 13%. By the way, I thought you should know, the left has been waging war on meat for years. So this is their dream come true, and I'm not kidding. I'm really not kidding about that. Coffee's up about 14%. Fresh fruit, 8%. Lettuce, 13%. Blah, 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 blah. But it's tough. It's tough. And then you go out to dinner, it's even worse. Here is the president of the United States... being asked about the responsibility, whose responsibility this is.
Why do you believe so many Americans believe that your administration is not doing enough to combat inflation? And do you believe that you and your administration bear some measure of responsibility for the inflation?
Well, it's because everything we do is kind of the antithesis of success. And there's something we've been incorporating in the last 18 months that has been very effective. It's called the crap touch. Maybe have you heard of it? Crap touch. And what it is when we touch things that actually are gold and we turn them to crap. COVID broke the economy. Now a recession may be coming. A Federal Reserve survey broke some bad news. Dating back to the 50s, whenever inflation and employment have hit today's levels, history suggests a recession may be near. Remember what the last recession did to your retirement? Well, I do. My friends at Lear Capital shared how investing in physical gold and precious metals can be a brilliant strategy against what's coming. Smart investors are buying gold and precious metals now for two reasons. One, gold can be a great hedge during a recession. Two, the closer a recession gets, the more your gold could be worth. Don't let your retirement take a hit like 08. Talk with my team at Lear Capital about owning precious metals for your savings and retirement accounts. One thing you'll love, Lear has a 24-hour risk-free purchase guarantee. These guys are completely committed to your satisfaction. Right now, you'll receive up to $10,000 in free bonus coins based on the value of gold coins you purchase. Visit LearCarson.com. That's LearCarson.com. So the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, are you ready for some hot sake? Because it's the last time we're going to have some hot sake, because she's moving over to MSNBC to do the same thing that she does right now, which is to be a mouthpiece for Joe Biden and the Democrat Party. She said that she's encouraging peaceful protests around the homes of Supreme Court justices. Yes, she thinks it's a good idea. Now, I want to ask you this. The last time you had a mob of people surround your house and chant slogans in the middle of the night, did you go, oh, that's cool. Yeah, you know, that's awesome. Hi. It's like Christmas carolers. That's what it is to Democrats, like Christmas carolers. It's like the people who, burned Portland for two summers ago. You know, they're like Christmas carolers. Look at them. They're trying to burn down the federal courthouse. There we go. Merry Christmas to you. It's just like Christmas caroling, except for kind of terrifying. Here is Jen Psaki.
So I know that there's an outrage right now, I guess, about protests that...
I guess there's an outrage? I'm really not sure. I'm just here. I don't even know what you're talking about. I just cracked the paper this morning, and I just kind of heard it was happening.
Been peaceful to date, and we certainly continue to encourage that outside of judges' homes. And
okay, there you go. So it's certainly, fine now. It's been peaceful up to date, and we will continue to encourage it. Let's hear that again.
So I know that there's an outrage right now, I guess, about... protests that have been peaceful to date, and we certainly continue to encourage that.
Now, the thing you have to worry about is when they become mostly peaceful.
Side of judges' homes, and that's the president's position.
Because when they become mostly peaceful, that's when things get really dangerous. You know, they're peaceful now, but warning, they could become mostly peaceful. Title 18 of the U.S. Code, Section 1507, makes protests outside the private residence of a federal judge a federal crime. Now you should know that this is real, by the way, and it's one of those laws that Democrats will decide whether or not they want to enforce it. Whoever with the intent of interfering with, obstructing, or impeding the administration of justice, or with the intent of influencing any judge, juror, witness, or court officer in the discharge of his duty, pickets or parades in or near a building housing a court of the United States, or in or near a building or residence occupied or used by such judge, juror, witness, or court officer, or with such intent uses any sound, truck, or similar device, or reports to any other demonstration in or near any such building or residence. God, I'm so glad I don't write this crap. Shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. You would think this would be fairly easy when you had people going into the United States Capitol on January the 6th, invited in by law enforcement. Just come on in. Just come on in. We'll open the door from the inside here. It's got a magnetic lock on it. You got to lock it from the inside. And so we're going to go ahead and just unlock it. Come on in. We're going to charge you with a crime and throw you in jail. Now well over a year. And no trial date set on most of them. It's kind of interesting that happens. Yeah. It is the Rob Carson Show. And we have a special guest, one of my favorite people to have on the air is Naomi Wolf, co-founder and CEO of Daily Kaut, the author of The Bodies of Others, The New Authoritarians, COVID-19 and the War Against the Human, and I believe she also has another book coming out. We'll get to that in a moment. Naomi Wolf joins us on the Newsmax hotline today. Hello, Naomi. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you. I noticed this morning, I went to see your Twitter profile. Have you been suspended?
Oh, gosh. I was suspended a year ago. And then I tried again this week to get unsuspended.
Okay.
And I pointed out in my appeal that I was suspended for posting a public document, first primary source document of Dr. Ralph Barrick's CV, which showed that he was the recipient of millions of dollars in gain-of-funding research from Dr. Fauci. And it didn't matter. I got slapped on the wrist again and told I was kind of never going to be allowed back on Twitter.
This is unbelievable. I knew you were off, and I thought you were back on because the reason being is I have a sheet in front of me that says, you know, it gives you a Twitter link. So this has got to be a big deal to you, this establishment of the Department of Disinformation that has come out, and I know you have some thoughts on it. What do you suppose is behind it, and what do you see is going to happen with regard to this unprecedented overreach with regard to the First Amendment in this country?
Yeah. Well, exactly what has happened historically every time there's been something like this, it doesn't get better. It only gets worse, and it results next in, I can tell you exactly, because I've been able to predict since 2008 exactly how our democracy would deteriorate if we didn't stand up to defend it peacefully. So they'll start going after journalists. They'll start going after commentators like you and me.
Yeah.
They'll go after opposition leaders. They'll start trying, and you're hearing this already from the president and from his spokespeople. They'll start defining conservative views as extremism and speech as dangerous or leading to violence, even when it's just opinion and, you know, protected by the First Amendment. And then there will be some high-profile arrests. And then, or six arrests all at once. I mean, that's the classic move. You know, a sudden shocking day when familiar faces, commentators, are arrested. And then they have, since 2012, the power to hold journalists or anyone without charge or trial indefinitely. That's the National Defense Authorization Act. So, you know, you may see them again or you may not, but it'll be like Julian Assange, right? There's no due process. And when that happens, based on my study of history, you know, civil societies close down within 6 months. And I think the goal of this Department of Misinformation is to intimidate and chill everyone prior to the midterms, of course.
This is remarkable, and I'm a little more optimistic than you, I think. I believe we're going to turn this around. This can't be allowed. You got this Nina Jankowicz, who is a nobody. She is saying that there are like-minded individuals that should be on social media, essentially governing what should and shouldn't be said, or at least tagging everything that you say with some sort of countermeasure, which is what the Facebook and what Twitter has already been doing. But they basically want to institutionalize this. They basically want to make this government policy. I don't think that we will be able to stand for it. I wanted to ask you, you've got a book coming out called The Bodies of Others that I'm curious about. I know we're having the abortion debate again this week, the possibility of Roe v. Wade being repealed. I have a feeling we may be on opposite ends of the spectrum with regard to this. You're pro-choice?
Yes.
Okay.
In a limited way.
I
don't think, like, I think I don't like that language because I don't think an abortion is ever something anyone should be pro. It's never a positive thing. It's always a, you know, as one feminist pro-life activist said, it's always a failure, you know, when a woman has, you know, feels like she has no other choice but to choose abortion. But in the first trimester, I don't see a way around it. Yes, it's not the same as being rah-rah pro-choice.
I understand. Now, Naomi, one thing that I have I just discovered about 4 years ago, and you may or may not know this, I was adopted at birth, and about 2 years ago, I found out that I was a product of a sexual assault. That's the reason why I was given up for adoption. Now, I certainly look at it as somewhat an arrow in the quiver of my pro-life stance. But at the same time, I don't purport to be able to relate or understand what it's like to be sexually assaulted and impregnated.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that is like. And I really, and listen, Naomi, I've known plenty of women in my life who have had abortions and have very mixed feelings about it afterwards. Go ahead.
I don't know if we really want to wade into this, but it's very germane. Look, what can I say? Here's what I feel. My life was changed when I went on a retreat run by nuns where there were avid pro-life activists and avid pro-choice activists. And we thought we would never understand the other side until we talked. And it turned out that we had more in common with each other than with people outside the room, because everyone in that room really cared about women and children. I know it's hard for a pro-life commentator to, take that as I say it, but it really was true, even if you don't agree with their conclusions. So what came out of that was that there were policies that both sides agreed on, like making adoption easier, right? That should be a no-brainer. And we were surprised on the pro-choice side that pro-lifers, many of them were willing to make contraception easier to get a hold of. We didn't know that. So those are smart, good, in my view, unless you have a religious objection. Those are good policies. But there's such an industry of pro-choice professional activists and such an industry of pro-life professional activists, and they don't want the conflict to end. So that's not good for women, and it's not good for children. So I just think we should, talk more, have compassion. And the other thing I would say, even though I don't see a way around a woman having a right to terminate a pregnancy in the first trimester, the reason that Europe doesn't have this horrible conflict around abortion is that there are no second and third trimester abortions in Europe without all kinds of hurdles to clear. Whereas the way Roe v. Wade was decided, it is a messed up decision in the sense that it was based on viability, and viability has changed since it was decided, and technology has changed. So, anyone who's been pregnant knows that a second trimester baby is a baby, and of course reasonable people are going to be upset torn about a law that says you can terminate, into the second or even third trimester. So think the country should come together with some sane policies. I don't think it's horrible that it went back to the states.
Yes.
Women are the majority of voters. But what I would really like to see is an America that puts women and babies first, because then you would have many, many, many fewer abortions.
I'm with you, and I think we have some common ground on that. Listen, I'm pro-life. If a woman has been sexually assaulted, I'll just say immediately she should be taken to a medical facility and given the option of an abortifacient that would terminate the fertilization of the egg. And I don't know about you, but I think gathering out in front of a Supreme Court justice's home and chanting, I think that's threatening. Maybe they're trying to brush it off today on The View. It's like, well, you get rid of what you sow. And they're acting like, oh, yeah, it's as long as they're peaceful. Well, what happens when they become mostly peaceful, Naomi, and houses start burning down? Because we were quiet. We weren't. But the left was quiet about $2 billion worth of damage in the summer of 2020. And that was mostly peaceful. What happens when the protests in front of Supreme Court justice houses become mostly peaceful and not peaceful?
Look, this is connected to your opening question, which is what about the Ministry of Truth? I mean, this is a move at every level. And this is the subject of my new book, The Bodies of Others. On every level, a coup has taken place, right? And on every level, and this is my view, you don't agree with me, but I trust that when you've read the book, you will agree with me if you haven't had a chance to yet. But, what do all these things have in common? Force, right? And the definition of a republic is it is a nation of laws, not men. It's a nation of a constitution and not rule by force, not rule by militias, not rule by coercion and bullying and intimidation. So, at this point, if people are protesting outside people's homes, I mean, it's the same to me as the very unpleasant experience for women getting abortions or, just getting checked for at Planned Parenthood or whatever for their health needs of pro-life chanters, which I've always supported as well, because speech is speech, right? Peaceful speech. But, you know, when you are outside someone's home, there is an element of intimidation. And, you know, let's go back to why, in my view, why the left doesn't have a leg to stand on right now about abortion rights. For 2 years, there were mandates which coerced and forced people against their will to take an injection they did not want. It was against the Nuremberg Code. It was against the law. It was against the Hippocratic Oath. Our president coerced people. Our president coerced, as commander-in-chief, people in the military who just wanted to serve the country. And I'm head of a 3,000-person volunteer group of doctors and scientists who are reviewing the Pfizer documents, and these are horrifically harmful, dangerous injections that people are forced to take.
Naomi,
my left-wing peers said it's fine. They were fine with a two-tier society. So by the same reasoning, you know, they've given up the moral high ground. They were willing to coerce other people's bodies. They are not persuasive when they say, my body, my choice now.
This is something that kind of brought us together, because I think you would probably define yourself as a classic liberal. I would say that I've always been a conservative, but willing to break bread with people of the opposite persuasion. Never had an issue with it before until, I guess, about the last 4 years. And we have suddenly been told in the last four and a half years what is misinformation and disinformation and what is true. And what it is the government has information, and anything that disagrees with it is misinformation or disinformation. This was a concept originally created by Joseph Stalin.
Right.
And we're in the throes of this right now, and I find it really audacious that they would actually use the word disinformation, because I think they realize that the mainstream media won't cover it, and they think that we're too stupid to either do any research or we have really short memories. But this is a bold new era as far as literally an organization, a government agency, that is going to decide what is disinformation and misinformation.
Yeah, and I can tell you as an author that it's already having a chilling effect, because I did some interviews today and the interviewer nicely said, like, are you scared that the Ministry of Information will have a negative comment about your book? And that was the first time I had kind of been faced with that so directly. But of course I'm scared. And it's supposed to be scary, right? And that's why the First Amendment has been defended so well by justice after justice, because they understood that you get a chilling effect. And you get a chilling effect, and this administration has been doing it from the beginning. You know, when they single out peaceful Americans expressing their opinions as the disinformation dozen, right, from the bully pulpit, the highest platform in the land, that's chilling. That's scaring Americans. So this is no accident. And, you know, I do see it somewhat more darkly than you do. I believe that a loose group of bad actors, including, and this is the argument in the Bodies of Others, including big tech companies, including the Chinese Communist Party, who's very active in subverting American culture, as experts in my book point out. It includes bad nonprofits like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and, of course, the World Economic Forum, right? They have exploited the pandemic intentionally with policies that don't make sense medically, don't make sense in terms of public health, but do make sense if their goal is, as I believe it is, to strip us of our freedoms. And especially in the case of big tech, and I'm a tech CEO, so I understand their business plan, they want and created a world through lockdowns and through manipulating data around COVID, and even through vaccine registries, the push for vaccine passports. They're trying to create a world which is a post-humane world, right?
Yes.
In which we're forced onto digital platforms to even see each other's faces. We have to order from Amazon. Mom and pop shops got crushed and targeted. You know, human activities like singing and worship and in-person schooling and dancing and weddings and funerals, all the things that give us strength, in-person town halls, right? Those give human beings a competitive advantage to technology, and those were the things that were crushed and targeted in the lockdowns and are still being targeted by big tech's pressure on public policy. So they want to create a world in which you have to swipe a credit card to have access to human community and commerce, And that is your body, right? And the boosters are the subscriptions. So it's I'm very cynical about it because we've allowed a two-tier society for the last 2 years. We've allowed our freedom of assembly to be taken away. We've allowed our right to worship to be taken away. All of those things should have had Americans fighting, you know, long before now. So I hope you're right, but I have not been impressed with the performance of my fellow Americans, except for a handful of patriots.
I understand because, you know, we were actually literally looking to France where they were having million people marches against mask and vaccine mandates while we sat on our hands. I'm not going to give up. I'm hopeful that that Twitter is going to be taken over by Elon Musk and that'll usher in some change. And I saw some change in the other platforms until the last week. And then they went back to the same old stuff.
I mean, no, there's a fight going on at the highest levels. I mean, I think all of these dances are related to the court order that forced disclosure of these 55,000 Pfizer documents.
And now, listen, I've got to run. The end of my show is nigh. Naomi, I want to have you on again. I am very interested in your book, The Bodies of Others, and I thank you, even though we may differ politically or whatever, I thank you for the work you're doing because I think we as people need to come together, particularly with regard to freedom of expression and being able to control your own body. Have a glorious day, and where can people find you on social media, obviously other than Twitter?
Thank you, Dr. Naomi R. Wolf on Getter, and please come to dailyclout.io where you can read the Pfizer reports and you can order The Bodies of Others also on Amazon or at your local bookstore.
Thanks for listening to the Newsmax Daily with Rob Carson. Check your cable guide or NewsmaxTV.com or watch free on YouTube, Roku, Apple, Pluto, Zumo, Amazon Fire, and your smart TV. Newsmax, America's fastest growing cable news channel. Check NewsmaxTV.com for details.